The following book title is called The Glorious Victory of Chastity in Joseph's Hard Conflict and His Happy Escape by Benjamin Jenks, 1646-1724. The Preface. The frequent alarms which we have from the many soul miscarriages of wanton lewd sinners give so much an occasion for all united endeavors to check and suppress a growing abomination that I shall make no apology for the present service here offered as owing to my country, though I expect but very coarse rewards for often a stir in the viper's nest, who will hardly forbear to hiss and avenge themselves as far as they can reach with their venomous stings. Yet, were such is the case that not only some managers of the stage set their wits at work to credit the most detestable cause and thereby give all the encouragement they are able to the scandalous tribe, such loose principles may be expected even naturally to issue in dissolute manners, but even in some that carry the face of religion, can yet take such liberty of running into the filthy conversation as to loathe themselves and plague their neighbors, and give occasion to the enemies of the Lord to blaspheme and speak evil of the way of truth. For teaching his professors to practice no better, it is time then to rub up the memories of such as can so forget themselves and try to awaken their drowsy sense, who are in such danger to be hardened through the deceitfulness of sin. And if the help come too late, and the attempt prove ineffectual to reclaim the tainted and to stop those that are driving on in a lustful career, yet I am not without hope that it may prove of some use to prepare the whole and warn the tempted to start back from throwing themselves upon their own shame and ruin. To this end, therefore, do I now produce and seek to improve the infamous instance of a brave youngster that maintained his virtue and his honor against all the artifice and importunity of a most charming temptress, that seeing what has been done may be done, none may allege any circumstances of their case for the necessity of carrying so wickedly as to act quite contrary, but be ambitious to follow the example so great and worthy, and thus, through God's grace, secure and win the happiest victory, the sweetest peace, and the highest glory. The Glorious Victory of Chastity. The story of Joseph contains such a noble subject of consideration. It is as much the more illustrious for all those bright rays of divine influence which we may observe here and there so remarkably falling into it. For even in every turn of his affairs, a kind of providence still followed him and watched over him to take care of him and to choose his inheritance for him. Yea, when things went never so cross with him, yet under the very frowns of the world, heaven smiled upon him. And alas, do I wonder to find such wonderful passages in his life, when I look upon him as a type and an eminent representative of our blessed Lord himself, both in his depression and temptation, also in his rise and exaltation, being spited and sold away by his brethren, falsely accused and condemned to lie and suffer with malefactors. Yet he happily weathered out all the storms, and nothing could prevent his advancement to honor, and that even of the highest post. He was made to be great, but little would have thought so at his first setting out, when Taisi was bartered away as a beast in the market, first by his own nearest kindred to the Ishmaelite carriers going down into Egypt, and again by those chapmen to Potiphar, the captain of Pharaoh's guard. But in his very adversity, prosperity attended him, because the Lord was with him, for whom God will raise in vain do men endeavor to suppress. His new master, the Egyptian officer, took notice that the Lord made all which Joseph did to prosper in his hand. Chapter 39, verse 3 of Genesis. And therefore he cast a very sweet aspect on him, and Joseph found favor in his sight. Nor did he any more use him as a slave or underling, but made him overseer of his house, and all that he had put into his hand. Whereupon he quickly found what a wise thing he had done, and what a profitable superintendent over his affairs he had found. For everything succeeded the better in which Joseph had a hand. And thenceforward a blessing of the Lord was upon all that he had in the house and in the field. Therefore did he deliver up all to Joseph's management, and trusted the whole that he had to this new steward's custody, with whom he was so highly satisfied that he took no further care to look after anything himself. But it is said in verse 6, he knew not aught he had, save the bread which he did eat. This is a mighty confidence in a stranger, but he knew what he did, and how well the trust was placed in such a favorite of heaven, crowned with blessings from above, in a continued series of all good success, where we see a master happy in his best servant, and a servant is happy in the kindest master. But, in this uncertain world, alas, what sweet sunshine without a suggestion of clouds and storms? What bright day did this not close up in a dark night, when all was so flourishing with Joseph, and everything round about him looked so gay upon him? Yet, there was a foul tempest hanging over him, and an ill instrument, devising wickedness against him, to involve him in trouble and mischief, and give him the hardest task, to save first his virtue, and then his life. His mistress became the lewd tempter to haunt and importune him, and forgetting her sex as well as her duty, very urgent and pressing she was with him, with repeated onsets hung burdensome upon him. And when she found herself baffled in the attempt, that there was no gaining of her point, but the holy good man, though wearied out of his patience, would not part with his innocence, to the shock of all her solicitations, and not only despised her courtship, but abhorred her motions, to love and lust, and turned all to spite and rage. And the impudence of an audacious strumpet grew to the hardiness of a notorious liar. She went and made an uproar in the house, and forged a devilish falsehood, telling first to the servants and then to the master as soon as he came home. What a villain this Joseph had showed himself, violently to assault her chastity, so that her own safety she was forced to make an outcry, upon which the guilty fled, and left his coat behind him, which he kept as a monument and evidence of his crime, to show and convince her lord, see how fruitful is one wickedness to breed another, and also how cunning to palliate and defend itself. For here was a very plausible tale, like to find credulous ears, yea, to win pity and favor to the seemingly oppressed, and to pull on indignation and revenge upon a daring aggressor. Such a quick and witty invention have the obnoxious to cover their shame. And so ready is the father of lies to help out his vassals, and suggest to them somewhat or other still to credit their cause, and defend themselves in the possession of their lusts. And this plot, so laid, did take, and had the effect which he wished. For the master, upon his wife's report of the matter, was all in a flame. His wrath was kindled, verse 19. And too hasty, without further inquiry or examination of the allegation, and too uncharitable to his good and faithful servant, presently clapped him up in prison. Thus may innocence be spit upon and run down, and such a stand, never so clear and untainted, may yet hear hard things, and lie under the foulest reproaches, as if they were the worst of men that deserved it all. But this will not always last. No, God in his due time will vindicate the cause of his slandered servants, and bring forth their righteousness as a light and their judgment as a noonday. Psalm 37, verse 6. Though the wicked watches the righteous and seeks to slay him, the Lord will not leave him in his hand, nor condemn him when he is judged. Verses 32 and 33. Therefore it follows, wait on the Lord and keep his way. Do not be discouraged there to proceed, because you do well and hear ill, for yet he shall exalt you to inherit the land, and when the wicked are cut off, you shall see it. So did it prove here, in the case of this impeached and abused servant of the Lord. Though he was made a prisoner, yet even here he found favor, that he was trusted as a head jailer, and had liberty to do at his pleasure. And all the rest were ordered as he gave the word, yea, the very prison, that low place, was made a step to his highest preferment, even the next place to the throne and to govern all the land of Egypt. For the Lord making him wise is an angel of God to interpret dreams. First, both of Pharaoh's butler and baker in the prison. Upon the credit of this, he was after called to do as much for the king himself, to interpret Pharaoh's own dreams, which he did so much to the king's content, that he thereupon presently set him up to that eminent height described in Genesis 41:40-43. You shall be over my house, and according to your word shall all my people be ruled. Only in the throne will I be greater than you. And Pharaoh said to Joseph, See, I have set you over all the land of Egypt. And Pharaoh took off his ring from his hand, and put it upon Joseph's hand, and arrayed him in vestures of fine linens, or silk, proper for that hot country, and put a gold chain about his neck. And he made him to ride in a second chariot that he had, and he cried before him, Bow the knee, and he made him ruler over all the land of Egypt. Now here was virtue and piety breaking out of clouds and obscurity to a glorious luster and dignity, as the apostle represents it in Acts 7:9-10, to patriarchs, moved with envy, sold Joseph into Egypt. But God was with him and delivered him out of all his afflictions, and gave him favor and wisdom in the sight of Pharaoh, king of Egypt. And he made him governor over Egypt and all of his house. And now he was in a condition to retaliate, and be even with his spiteful brethren that sold him away. And very kindly indeed he was revenged upon them, first, to entertain them with the best fare, and all the endearments of comfortable words and obliging carriage, and the discovery and opening of himself to them, and afterwards to pleasure them with all the fat and the good of the land of Egypt, in which he instated and settled them, and all that belonged to them, so highly setting up his whole family, as well as wonderfully reviving the spirit of its aged father, not only to see the face of that son, whom he had given up for lost, but also to enjoy the transporting sight, and share in the happy fruits of its greatness and glory, and lordship over all the land. And though such splendor and honor is not always to be reckoned upon in this world by all that do righteously, and suffer wrongfully, yet, whoever you are, when conscious to your own integrity, though aspersed, and heavily charged with the things which you have not done, and dressed up for such as one that you know yourself not to be, then be in no care about the manner, so as to break out and bluster, and execute vengeance, but wait patiently for the Lord, and commit your cause to him that judges righteously, never fearing but in good time he will lay open mysteries of iniquity, and bring to light the hidden things of darkness, put your accusers to confusion, and make them to know that he has loved you. Oh, what a guard and strong tower is uprightness, to make the righteous bold as a lion, and undaunted under all calumnies and abuses. Never violate conscience then, but stem the tide of all temptations that would put you beside your duty, and still preserve your integrity. So shall you find it a sure friend, and a sweet retreat to you, whatever befalls you. Resolve with the upright man. Job 27:6. My righteousness I hold fast, and will not let it go. My heart shall not reprove me so long as I live. So take this pattern by this excellent person here to act bravely as he did, when any way tempted as he was, to put off all the circumventions and insinuations, all the entanglements and persuasions of any tempters to folly and filthiness, with such a replication as is here. How can I do this great wickedness and sin against God? The interrogation speaks his detestation of the lewdness to which it was solicited, that he would not hear talk of any such thing, though he showed the respect to a mistress, so as to reason and withstand her with arguments, and not presently flew in her face, to give her the hard name she deserved. Yet was he nothing the nearer to a compliance and becoming a party in her wickedness. For let superiors be never so vicious in forgetting all their duty, yet We must not be so rude with them as to forget all decency, but give them the deference belonging to their places, and at the same time show such resentment of their ungodliness as to let them understand that we cannot brook or like it any better in them than in any others. Nor will we ever be awed or influenced by them to consent and join with them, to lose ourselves with him that is infinitely greater and better than any of them. Here's a handsome and unanswerable put off. How can I do this great wickedness and sin against God? It signifies an absolute refusal of the evil suggested, as much as if he had said, I will not do it. But least, that should be taken for too blunt and short, it's carrying on more of will than of reason in it. The holy man so contrives his answer as to be full of argument, to carry a shining light and a sharp conviction in it, and not only to give a repulse, but at the same time also an implicit instruction to the tempting companion. How can I do it? Poses not only an unreasonableness, but a kind of impossibility in the case. For any righteous, ingenuous, and pious man, when himself to be so concerned, again, he declares his utter aversion to it as an ill thing, never to be allowed. How can I do this wickedness, yea, more than an ordinary evil, an aggravated iniquity, this great wickedness? And yet further he throws it out with indignation, not only as an injury to his neighbor and his master, but a heinous offense and provocation against his supreme Lord and Maker. How can I do this great wickedness and sin against God? Now this was to strike all dead. Speak not a word more to me of any such manner. It is to no purpose, for God is against it, and therefore I cannot. I will not ever be for it. If it be to turn him against me, who is more than all the world to me, I will never hearken to you, nor to any one upon earth that should so offer to tempt me. No, how can I do this great wickedness and sin against God? But before I take into consideration the manner of its conquering a temptation, let me observe how he was put to it, and to what a height the temptation rose upon him, in a measure more than ordinary, to try him, for the one will more illustrate and set off the other, and the brighter will shine that victory where have been the sharper encounters and the greater difficulty. The higher renown is due to those warriors who have grappled with enemies and hardships which to others might appear insuperable, and have made their way through such brushes and obstacles where weak or common forces would have presently yielded and given up all. Now the temptations of Joseph were not barely from the pleasures of sin, and those brutish delights of gratifying fleshly lusts, which is a wide and filthy ditch where so great a part of this world is commonly plunged and lost. This is not all, that he had the opportunity to take a fill of those stolen sweets, and glut himself to work all uncleanness with greediness, when the whorish woman had so laid the scene that the master was abroad, and they were so solitary as to be out of the reach of all other company. But there were some things more peculiar in the temptation, such as the prosperity of the tempted, the sex of the tempter, her doting upon him, and her superiority over him. 1. The person tempted was young, in the flower and prime of his age, in the vigor and brickness of a firm constitution, in the warmth and fermentation of blood and spirits, basking in the smiles of fortune, favored by a potent master, and made the topping man of all of his family, to have what he would, and to command all as he pleased. Here was a fine flourishing youngster, one might have thought, fit to be caught in the devil's snare of fleshly pleasure, right for the purpose to swallow the baits of lust, even as soon as thrown before him. But he proved another man, and showed himself more wise and stanch than so to be caught, that he would not fly to so common excuse of lewdness and smooth it off as a trick of youth. No, but let the world see that a young, fresh, lively man could yet be chaste, virtuous, honest, and a godly man, And so may good, whatever he said, Genesis 42, verse 18, I fear God. And oh, how truly great and praiseworthy is it for them that are youthful, healthy, and vigorous, to be sober, modest, and religious, so to remember their Creator, is not to be drawn away by the tempter, when you are not under the decays of nature, nor going down a hill, as they call it, but coming into the world and pushed on by flesh and blood to follow the common way of the world, yet you decline it, and mortify the youthful lusts, and will not run with the giddy gang to their wild assemblies and excesses, sportings, and fooleries. This indeed is now your high honor, and presages also your everlasting pleasure, though the corrupt sinner will be your censurer, and applaud the lewd youngster when he has committed his vile prank, crying, I commend him for it. What should he do else? Your God, and your conscience, and all that are wise and worthy will indeed justify and praise you for the contrary. And therefore does the young Joseph live so renowned in the memories of God's servants, and will do so to the world's end, for holding in the lusts, and keeping under the body, which would have thrown him upon the enticing wickedness, and his wanton mistress. She stands recorded only to be exposed and abominated by all the world, as much as her lascivious overtures were rejected and loathed by this truly good and worthy hero, who did not escape the scorching, because he had nothing in his nature to take fire, but because his grace and virtue overruled everything that was opposite and contrary to his duty. For to some it is no small thanks that they abstain, and not so much their holy choice as their bodily temper, and so they may be proud of that, which is none of their praise, and when cold and dry, or distempered and afflicted, may insult instead of pitying the tempted, because they don't know how hard is a battle of chastity, where is complete vigor of body, and all worldly prosperity. But to be under the circumstances of a Joseph, young and lusty, fresh and fair liking, having all about him to please, and nothing to trouble him, yet to possess his vessel in sanctification and honor, and not admit of a temptation to corrupt him, though offered with all the address and invitation imaginable to him. This is an achievement worthy of a hero, and such honors belongs only to God's saints. Number 2. The temptation was greater from the sex of the tempter, that a woman should so beset a man, though it redounded more to her infamy, as being the reverse of that modesty which is a woman's glory, and showed her to be arrived at that impudence which many a woman know quite too bad, yet never reaches to. I say, though the lewd attack branded the woman for a stigmatized creature, meriting the utmost confusion, yet, at the same time, how much bigger did it render the trial to a man, and such a polite, courtly man as Joseph was, to cast scorn and disdain upon a female solicitor, when even the common usage of the world in most places gives so much respect to that sex, and honor to the weaker vessel, that their very requests pass for commands, and men count it rude to cast out the suit, where a woman is a petitioner, but here the courtier had rather be thought a clown than be found a brute, and would please no lady on earth to lose himself with this great Lord in heaven. And surely Joseph was in the right, not to mind so much the person asking as the thing she asked, for had it been fit for a modest woman to seek, and for a worthy man to grant, however great or hard to be done, he would have strove for the honor of fulfilling her desire. Aye, but when it was that which was impudent to be requested, and criminal to be yielded to, he could not then compliment her with God's right, nor give his body to the woman, when at the same time he must give his soul to the devil. And how well had it been for us all, if the first man had showed more of this stiffness, and been less easy and compliant to a woman, in such an ill thing as was against God's express charge, and not think to execute it as he did in Genesis 3:12, the woman, which he gave to be with me, she gave me of the tree, and I did eat. If any woman have the face to propose what is so base and wicked, or make signs for the doing of such a thing as no man that fears God can consent to, or allow of, you must have the face then, the courage and the conscience to put her ill manners to shame, in frowning upon the fulsome wanton and scorning the ungodly motion, and in such a case, do not fear to forget your breeding and your courtship, when any infamous creature can so forget her sex and her God. Number 3. The temptation grew upon Joseph that it was not only a woman which offered it, but such as one as doted upon him, and had him in admiration, was so fond of him, that she longed after him, and day by day became a beggar to him. For it is said, verse 6, Joseph was a goodly person and well favored. He was of a taking aspect, and made a lovely figure. And it came to pass after these things that his master's wife cast her eyes upon Joseph. And she said, Lie with me. Thus she looked so as to lust. And though her eyes passed a concupiscence, which fired her heart. Now here were the eyes full of adultery that could not cease from sin. 2 Peter 2:14. Thus David's lust that cost him so very dear entered in, lusting, gazing on Bathsheba, 2 Samuel 11:2. And oh, how many have been betrayed and undone by the thieves coming in at these casements. Therefore, if we do not make Job's covenant with our eyes, not to look, yet I am sure it is no more than needful for us to make David's prayer to God, that he would restrain them from looking to our hurt and ruin. Psalm 119, verse 37. Turn away mine eyes from beholding vanity, though beauty, as it is a creature of God, in a sort of silent harmony and charming music to the eye, is not to be defamed and set at naught, but that which is lovely in itself deserves to be loved by us, so that it be the object of an inferior love, and not made the jewel of burning lust. Yet there is a snare and danger in it both to the possessors of it, and to the gazers at it. They that have it lie under the temptation to be proud of it, to value themselves too much upon it, and to be so pleased and tickled with the praise of it. It's easier to be caught in the toils of those who have no better design upon them than by it to entrap them. And thus their vanishing beauty helps to draw upon them an everlasting deformity. And by their fair faces they lose their precious souls. And they also, to give themselves to gaze on beauty till they are entangled and overcome, as here Potiphar's wife was. Oh, how do they sacrifice all the better sense to their bodily sight, and let out their wits and their souls and their eyes, till they leave nothing but fools and brutes behind. When such splendid images of the alluring objects are imprinted on the brain, then nothing else can be thought of, or counted worth or regarding, than God and Christ and heaven and the glory eternal, are all forgotten and postponed, yea, all sold away and given up for a face, in other words, for a piece of finer dirt. Thus, the vain woman here made herself so vile, she that might, if she would have discerned and falsely viewed another and better beauty in Joseph, had she looked further than his poor, perishing body, into his precious heavenly soul, she might thus have entertained her contemplation, not to destruction, but to edification, and might have then there the wisdom, the grace, and piety which should have controlled her folly, and struck dead all the very thoughts of her lascivious impurity. But the lust so bloated her eyes, she could see nothing but that flesh which was a jewel of her wild fire, and made her covet nothing so much as her sin and shame and undoing. And oh, how many unthinking men do lose themselves and become captives not only to their harlots, but to the murderer of their souls, and so may come at last to wish that they had never enjoyed the use of their sight, rather than so to abuse it, only to debauch their minds and feed their lusts and ruin their souls. But how great here was the temptation to Joseph, that such a one should be so much taken with him, and first set her eyes and then her heart upon him, and despise all else in comparison of him. For how apt are we highly to prize those that have the highest aim for us, and to think ourselves obliged in a just as well as kind retaliation to return love back again to our lovers, being naturally fond of ourselves. We cannot but like well of such as agree with us, to think as favorably of us, and entertain a dear kindness for us. Yet, how much soever Joseph might think this pretender was enamored with him, he would not be entangled by her, nor let her admiration of him be the lure to catch him in his snares. No, he looked on her eyes as so vitiated with a peccant humor that she could see nothing in him but what was fit to serve her lewd design upon him. And then he abhorred to think that ever the servant of God should so truckle to so vile a purpose. Yea, it was enough to put him quite out of conceit with that beauty which should be made to pander to iniquity, and to put him upon wishing that his face had been all but a scab, rather than it should ever be used as a bait to the devil's snare. And here, see the vanity to be caught with the complexion or proportion of a face, which is one of those common traps by which the enemy beguiles and takes so many silly souls. And you that make such an idol of your face, and you that make such a work to set off your face, and render it more alluring to draw in the eye of fools, oh, think with yourself, where will be the pride of that face, when sickness, age, and death have come over it, and all demolished it forever? And oh, what joy then will you have in the encomiums and remembrance of that face, which was made the price of souls, both your own and others, that cost you your soul for making it the greater incentive to your pride and lust, and it cost the souls also of those whom you did set yourself to bewitch and draw them from their God, and their duty to dote on your beauty and to partake with you in your sinful vanity, your destructive folly. Number 4. Joseph's temptation rose up yet higher from his mistress's superiority over him, that she was in a place and quality so much above him, and to have such a one's favor was no small manner, but the privilege whereof many a one would have been so proud as to buy it even at any rate. Oh, how few would have thought it a dear purchase to pawn their chastity for it! Would not some rather have boasted of the honor than stuck it to sin? They that can glory in their shame, when it is but to have their will of an inferior prostitute, yea, they can belie themselves to brag of their lewdness, even with such as have not been touched, how would they have swelled with the attainment to get up into their honorable master's bed, yea, to be courted to it by one so much their superior, and thereby to gratify their pride and lust both together, such as can stoop and debase their souls into a subjection to the vilest strumpet, where they may get nothing but to empty their souls of honesty and their purses of money, and to fill their names with a brand, their bodies with a plague, and their conscience with stings, none of them ever to be worn off or fetched out. Oh, how would they have applauded the felicity of such an opportunity, and reckoned themselves even in paradise to be so preferred. But Joseph was wiser and better than to be blinded in gold with such shows and shams. He knew the fine-colored worm to be still but a worm, and a wanton lady, though never so gay, to be but a filthy harlot, such as God would judge, and without any respect to persons condemn. And alas, what more comfort would it be for you to be strangled with a silken cord than with a hempen rope? You may be as miserably hanged in silver chains as if they were made of iron. The great whore will at last find little cause of rejoicing in the prerogative to be greatly plagued, and that wretched captive who falls to such a prey will perceive as little relief in hell's misery that the wickedness which threw him upon it looked with a fair face and made a flourishing appearance. For all that is damnable uses to seem so plausible, or else a tempter would find more checks in his trade, and oftener lose his pains. Oh, how many are now in hell, who were beguiled there by that which once shined in their eyes even like heaven. It was the beautiful aspect, the rich equipage, and the gaudy trappings of the temptation, these that befooled them and undid them, and such is all the devil's friendship, so to dress up the sin as to make it fit to catch and spill the soul. Oh, see through it then as Joseph did. Look beyond the tempting bait to the deadly hook, and if it be offered to you as a piece of kindness and advantage, think how you would like the kindness to be hugged to death, or what advantage would you count it to be drowned in a pit of milk or honey? Oh, how much more to you is your soul's life and salvation than any of the biggest friend's humor and satisfaction. Nay, is that your friend who would pull you from your God and your heaven to involve you in the snare and condemnation of the devil? Oh, cruel kindness to do you the deadly mischief, for which neither that friend nor all the world can ever make you any recompense. A true friend would seek your real good, and not to make you miserable forever. And let him seem never so able and ready to do mighty manners for you, as what might not Joseph now have expected in this world from the tempting dame? Yet, if that friend acts Satan's part, and takes the very way of a most deadly enemy to your soul, suspect then, and reject all the proffered kindness, and look upon it but as a devil tricked up in a winning mine and splendid attire, and so coming about you only to put the undoing cheat upon you. If to friends it breathes nothing but dearness, and raises your expectation of this and that which he will do for you, if he goes about to invade your soul's rights, and to plunder you off better goods than ever he can give to you, in other words, to bereave you of your virtue, your chastity, your present peace, and your everlasting felicity, though it be from a superior, your master, your guardian, your chief promoter, on whom hang all your worldly hopes and fortunes, yet scorn the offer, and defy the tempter, and venture all his displeasure. If he forget his love and his duty, do not you forget your God and your safety. If he blush not to be such a transgressor, you need not blush to be his reprover. If he bid never so high to make you the prey of its lust, and a child of hell, alas, poor creature, what a wretched purchase would you have of it to gain such a friend, when to gain even the whole world would signify nothing, nor do you any of the least good, set over against the loss of your soul. Oh, then, be choice of your jewel, and look narrowly to your darling, your dear, your only one, and never let the greatest of friends, nor the most promising advantages of the world so befool and delude you, as to prevail with you to expose and give up that which, when once gone, is never to be recovered. Never any manner of compensation to be made for that damage, but it will be absolutely irreparable, and by it you must lie and cry and smart and grieve, even world without end. Let the temptation come then from what quarter it will. Let it be recommended with all the address and colors which wit and art, wealth and honor, can put upon it. Yet, think still with yourself, alas, what is here but a cloud and fiction, and an empty nothing. What price is this for my soul? Here the tempter now is raising a mist to dim my sight, shakes his tinsel wares and flying plagues to dazzle my eyes. But I see the cheat and the danger. There is only a little vanish, and some shadow of good, but in truth, all is dark, not, and beyond the bare surface, nothing but the worst of evil. I will stand on my ground then, and resist steadfast in the faith. Yea, I'll resist even unto blood, striving against sin, rather than lose my God, and throw away my soul.